Hi, I'm Betty Rose, the pinup punisher from Gothenburg, Sweden, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Life Radio, episode 161. I am your host, Micah Sin, here with my guest, Micah Sin, and don't forget my little brother, Micah Sin. That's right, it's just me this week, folks. This might go down in history as the best episode of Wrestle Life Radio, because you don't have to worry about having to listen to these other hosts like Matt and Kyle. Ugh, gross. It's just me. You just have to worry about the correct opinion, and that is my own. I am quite opinionated, as I'm sure you've known throughout the episodes we've had here on Wrestle Life Radio. But yeah, we're probably going to have a bit of a short show today. Kyle nor Matthew can make it because they don't care about the podcast and our podcast fans as much as I do. So yeah, we're just going to kick it off today and talk about AEW. But before we do that, we have to go through this day in wrestling history. And 15 years ago today, TNA presented Destination X from the Impact Zone in Universal Orlando Studios. And that was the debut of former WCW World Champion Scott Steiner. Big, big deal for TNA getting a huge name like Big Papa Punk. I mean, just the fact that you could get a mathematical genius like him really cemented their company for years to come. Main evented by Christian Cage. We'll talk about him a little bit later in the show. And also, you had a great Ultimate X match with Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, and AJ Styles, with Christopher Daniels retaining his TNA X Division Championship. So that was back when TNA was good. Not saying that they're bad now, but it's not the product for me. But yeah, looking back now and in the mid-2000s, they were just really on a roll. You see people complaining about, you know, WWE or AEW turning into TNA, and man, I'm totally fine if we got AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe versus Christopher Daniels. But you know what? We didn't get that match tonight, but we did get Rey Fénix versus Matt Jackson opening up the show, and man, what a match. Of course, I wasn't on the Revolution review show, so I didn't get to give all of my opinions, but I'll say they were pretty in line with the other guys on the show. Obviously, disappointed by the ending. I know we were there, and I was like, oh, that, I wonder how bad that looked on TV. So I pull up a video on my phone, and I was like, oh, it looked worse on TV than it did in person. But, you know, we're not worrying about the past. We're moving forward just like AEW did in the show. I think they did a good job moving past the awful, awful ending of Revolution. And I feel like their solution to that terrible ending was, hey, let's open up the show with Rey Fénix, because that's how you get people to watch your TV show. You put the best wrestler in the business all on singles action to open up Dynamite. And you had Rey Fénix versus Matt Jackson. Just a great match. It's not quite up there with Nick versus Rey Fénix we got on an earlier Dynamite back when we actually had fans, but man, this is the first time I think I've ever seen Matt Jackson in singles action. I didn't mean to make that rhyme, but this was really, really good. I did really enjoy it. I do think Fénix is one of the best competitors in the world. For sure the best high flyer. I was rooting for Rey Fénix the whole time. I know Matt's supposed to be the babyface. I guess they're both technically babyfaces right now. But how can you not root for Rey Fénix, man? Just anytime he's in the ring, he just brings pure gold. I'm not going to go over the whole match because Kyle's usually our guy for that. I'm not huge on play-by-play. But we did end the match with a very cool sequence of Matt Jackson trying to hit Rey Fénix with a tombstone piledriver, but Rey Fénix came out and countered him with the sit-down tombstone piledriver for the win. Just looked devastating. Throughout the match, we went to the crowd and we saw Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian looking on. They are, I believe, the number 2 ranked tag team in the division, so they are our runners-up for the next shot after Death Triangle. And they have said that the next match that they lose, they will never wrestle again. And based on CD's recent interview, he seems like he's kind of in the twilight of his career, and he's really just focusing on bringing younger kids up. So it may be the end of SCU whenever we get that inevitable match between either them and the Young Bucks or them and Death Triangle. And you hate to see it, but you also, it's great that they will inevitably be able to be going out on their own terms, right? I'm sure we'll still see some singles actions with them, but you have to know when it's time to hang it up, and I'm sure that will just be a fantastic match. Just like Young Bucks versus Death Triangle will be here in the near future. But yeah, I thought this was a really fun way to kick off Dynamite. I don't see how you can watch Rey Fénix and not enjoy it. After that, we had Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston reacting to the end of the exploding barbed wire death match. The commentators kind of throughout the whole first match are putting over, hey, hold on, we'll hear from Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston about the barbed wire death match. They're kind of like really like, please stay tuned. We've got Eddie Kingston. He's going to talk and he's going to make it all better, because that's pretty much what happened. You had Moxley and Eddie seated on a couch alongside, like they're wearing sunglasses. They're drinking. They're sitting in front of a fire. It's shot really, really well, I think. And Eddie Kingston goes back and he tells a story from his early life when he was, I think, in a jail cell. And he said it's the last time he's ever felt like he did at Revolution. The anxiety, the fear. He basically sells it as, I was so afraid and anxious, my body kind of shut down. I thought that's the way he would go. But man, this segment with Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley did a fantastic job of making people forget about how terrible that ending was. Now, let me reiterate, that ending was terrible. But Eddie Kingston can sell a comb to a bald man. I mean, he is one of the best talkers in the business. Love everything about him. I hope he's getting a huge payday here in AEW, because he's a huge asset for sure. Moxley speaks up and says, you know, I kind of wanted to see an explosion. Eddie's like, yeah, so did a lot of people. Just great segment. If you don't watch anything on this show, I highly recommend this segment. It's very, very good banter. I'm excited to see Mox and Kingston as a potential tag team. We'll talk about it a little bit later in the show. We'll get there. But yeah, this was just a great segment. We then had Cody Rhodes versus Seth Gargus. This was a total squash match. Cody Rhodes beat him in like, I don't know, 30 seconds. But what was really important is the after-match segment. You had Pentagon Jr. there on the Spanish announce table, which does he do the Spanish announcing? That would be kind of awesome. I did not know that. But he's there with Alex Abrahantes, and Cody's celebrating. Pentagon stands up looking like a million bucks. He's got a full suit and a luchador mask, which is just a fantastic look. Shivani is there interviewing Cody, asking about his shoulder and all that. That's how this got started. But he is interrupted by Pentagon. The camera pans over, and it's like this weird angle we've never got before of like the other side of the ring, like they shot it from the entrance ramp. It was just a really cool visual. It's not something we see a lot. It kind of changed it up. This whole segment kind of seemed different from what we normally see on AEW, and I really liked it. You didn't have somebody coming out from the tunnel interrupting. You didn't have somebody on the screen. It just kind of felt different. Pentagon pulls Alex Abrahantes out with him, and he basically wants him to translate for him. He speaks a little bit in English. And he basically just dresses Cody down. Cody says that, you know, his shoulder wasn't 100% in the ladder match. And Pentagon comes out and says, you know what? If it would have been just me and you, your shoulder would be so bad, you would not even be able to hold your baby girl that's about to be born. And that sends Cody off. He runs into the stands after Pentagon. The whole crowd, air quotes, the wrestling crowd, breaks them up. And this is setting up Cody versus Pentagon for next week. Also, he had a really good line. He said that if Cody is the Prince of Pro Wrestling, then Pentagon Jr. is the Lord of Lucha Libre. That got the whole crowd chanting Lucha Libre. Just really cool. I am so stoked for Pentagon Jr. versus Cody Rhodes. I cannot wait. We're getting it next week on free TV. Just I love Pentagon. And I think Cody really does well when he has somebody like that to work with. Not saying that Cody's not a world-class talent, but I think that someone like Pentagon will really work well with Cody. We then have a segment backstage with Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy. Apparently, we're continuing the feud with Miro and Kip Sabian. Not super stoked about it. They're basically in an arcade, and they're saying that, you know, basically, they cheated to win at Revolution. I mean, kinda. They're saying that they don't understand why Miro's being this way. And Chuck Taylor says, you know what? I'm sick of this. Miro, if we lose this next match, I will be your butler forever, I think he said. Like, so he can't lose this match, right? They're basically setting up what I would call an arcade lumberjack match. They're going to have arcade machines set up around the ring, I suppose, and they're going to be throwing each other into them. I'm pretty sure this match is either going to end in Kip taking the pin after an inadvertent Miro attack or something to do with Penelope. It's going to be a screwy finish, and it's probably going to get Orange Cassidy the win. I don't know, man. Like, I feel like the Revolution match should have been the end of Miro and Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy and Kip. I think it's run its course now. But I guess they could always get one more match. Speaking of things running its course, we then had the Icon Sting coming to talk to Tony Schiavone in his weekly fashion. I guess they think that they can announce Sting and it'll pop the ratings, but it hasn't been proven to do so. I love Sting. I think the cinematic match is one of my favorite cinematic matches we've had so far. I did watch it live in the stadium. I know Kyle said there was an issue with the commentating. I haven't watched it with the commentary. They shouldn't have commentary on a match like that, in my opinion. It works for like a funny match, like the Stadium Stampede, but it doesn't work for the cinematic matches like, you know, the Boneyard match, for instance. Or even the Firefly Funhouse match. I don't think that had commentary. But yeah, so Tony Schiavone announces Sting saying, "This is Sting!" Which I'm kind of getting sick of, if I'm being honest. Love Tony Schiavone, love Sting, but learn to not overuse things. Sting's music plays, he comes out, and Tony Schiavone praises Sting for his excellent comeback in the street fight alongside Darby Allin. They're talking a little bit about Ricky Starks, Brian Cage. And guess what? Sting got interrupted. No, it wasn't Taz this time, which is good. But I don't think Sting can have an interview without getting interrupted. Out comes the Murderhawk Monster Lance Archer with Jake the Snake Roberts. Lance Archer says, "If you're not going to give me the time, I'm going to take the time." He says that he didn't need to win any ladder match at Revolution to prove that he is the face of the Revolution. And he talks about taking what is his and claims that it will be soon, I guess. I don't know. I guess we're going to Archer versus Darby. Archer has to win that, right? What feuds has Archer won looking back? Like, he's on a real roll. I know Kyle's a huge fan of him. I'm a huge fan of him. I just feel like he has to win something, and I'm not sure if Archer versus Darby is the way to do it unless they're willing to put the title on him. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Surely we're not getting Archer versus Sting. That just doesn't seem like a great matchup. A 60-something-year-old man versus a giant just doesn't seem like a great match, but we'll see. Archer then walks off, and Jake walks off behind him. Tony's like, "Sorry, Sting. Sorry we're interrupted." And Sting's like, "Okay, I'll see you next week, Tony," which I thought was kind of funny. I think he should really, like, it would really do Sting well to point out, "Hey, am I ever going to get a chance to talk here?" I don't know. It would be a little funny, a little bit behind the scenes for me. We then see Dasha Gonzalez with QT Marshall and Lee Johnson backstage. I guess QT's still part of the Nightmare family. He turned heel at Revolution. I thought that was plain, but I guess they wanted to do something on TV with him too. Dasha asked him about basically his heel turn at Revolution. He says, "You know, emotions were high. I got a little bit hot, but this week I'm here for Lee Johnson. And we're going to go out there and we're going to get a win for the Nightmare family, blah, blah, blah." And yeah, then we have All Ego Ethan Page versus Lee Johnson. And now, I know since the beginning, we've complained about AEW's production quality, right? Now, I know we're not huge to talk. I'm running a one-man podcast this week. It's not the highest production quality. I have a Yeti mic and I'm here talking to you on Audacity. Okay, we're not a billion-dollar company, a million-dollar company. But AEW has millions of people watching every week. They have TNT. They have their pay-per-view sales. They're making a ton of money, right? They're signing all. They may not be making a ton of money, as many people as they have to pay on their roster, let me be fair. But they are trying to make themselves in line with WWE, which for all their faults doesn't really have that many production problems. They have a lot of problems, but production is not one of them. We obviously had the huge fail at Revolution. We've always had audio issues. We've always had I've had issues with the camera cuts, personally. Always little things that seem to make them seem just a little bit Bush League. And this is terrible, right? And it's not totally AEW's fault. It's TNT's fault. But throughout the next match, All Ego Ethan Page's Dynamite debut against Lee Johnson over the AEW sound, they played the sound from an NBA game, I think between like the Jazz and somebody else. Like Kyle even sent me a Snapchat and was like, okay, I've turned my TV off, turned it back on. What is going on? So I pop up on the live feed, all the people commenting, because I watch on Fight TV. Everybody's like, what's going on? Why do I hear defense? Defense. It like started in the first commercial break. It was like three quarters of the match. How does this happen? I don't even know. Like, do wires get crossed at TNT? I don't understand. And they didn't fix it for a while. Like, it went on for probably 15 minutes. It's just unacceptable. Tony Khan apologized about it on Twitter. He posted the entirety of the match, which is good on him. I guess that's the most he can do at this point. But I feel bad for Ethan Page. I guess it'll make his debut memorable. I don't know. Apparently, like, Ain't No Mountain High Enough was playing during it, which kind of seems great as a backing track for a wrestling match. I wouldn't totally hate that. But yeah, this match was... It was okay. It wasn't a squash match by any means. It was a solid match. I don't really know who Ethan Page is, like, coming into it. I know he was in TNA. He's, like, part of this great tag team or whatever. When he debuted at Revolution, I'm like, I've heard of this guy. I don't even know what promotion he was with. But he looks solid. He did wrestle very solid. I'm not seeing anything special in him yet. But we'll see as that comes across. But yeah, just a huge disappointment for him. Ethan Page did win. He got a razor's edge, I believe, for the win. After the match, QT Marshall just walked off as Ethan Page beats down Lee Johnson. So, I don't know, like... We had this big heel turn moment, and then this week he's like, okay, I'm kind of a face again, and then he's just like, I'm just going to walk off. I don't know. I think that the heel turn moment was Revolution, and they should have just stuck with it there. I don't know completely why they decided to do this. Maybe they wanted it on TV. Dustin Rhodes comes out and makes the save for Lee Johnson as QT Marshall walks off. Like, why was he even there if he's just going to walk off while the dude gets beat down? I don't understand it. I don't know. We will see where that leads. We then have what I think is the best segment in AEW history. That's right, Alex Marvez is there with Hangman Adam Page. He's talking about the big money match where Adam Page got all this money. And Adam Page rolls in on his new lawnmower. I popped so hard for this lawnmower. This is long-term booking at its finest, folks. I think it was like a year ago. His Chiron read, Hangman Adam Page needs a new lawnmower. He's been tweeting about needing a new lawnmower for a year. It's been a BTE segment how he's been trying to afford a new lawnmower. He finally gets some money, and the man gets a rightfully deserved new zero-turn lawnmower. I'm hyped for him. I'm so glad that he can quit cutting his grass with a pair of scissors or whatever it is he's using and mow his lawn in fashion. He deserves it. He deserves a new lawnmower. He says that basically Marvez asked him about the big purchases he made. He sees he bought the lawnmower. He says, you know what? I bought this new lawnmower. I bought a couple barrels of whiskey, and I donated the rest of it to a local education fund, which seems like a very Adam Page thing to do. Good on him. Just a true baby face of baby faces. The Dark Order comes up. They're goofing around. They're all hopping on the lawnmower. And Five starts to jump on the lawnmower, and they're like, whoa, man, what are you doing? What are you doing? There's a weight limit on this thing. You can't just hop on here. And he looked kind of sad, like, oh. And then Adam Page is like, hey, guys, you going to go get some ice cream? And they take off and almost tip over. There's like 9 of them on this lawnmower. It's not built for this. They almost flip over. It was a hilarious sight. They all like kind of freak out. You can see it in their face. And then Five is like, oh, well, I'll catch up later, guys. I thought we were done treating Five badly. I mean, I don't love Five getting treated so poorly. He's kind of the hangman of the group, as hangmen were in the Elite. But yeah, I love this segment. I'm so glad that Hangman got his lawnmower. That's kind of the story of wrestling for me right now. We then have Tony Schiavone coming out. And he says we're going to get the interview with Christian Cage we've been waiting for. His debut at Revolution, I was super hyped for. I do think it was kind of lackluster for him just to come out, sign the paper, and leave. But you got to get people wanting more, right? You got to keep them get to tune into your show next week, which, spoiler alert, didn't really work. They were down like 200,000 viewers this week. They did have Shaq last week, but the demo was exactly the same. They lost about 200,000 viewers, possibly from the ending of Revolution. I think that's entirely possible, but it is kind of in line with what we were making a few weeks ago. So it'll all equalize in the long run. But then you had Tony Schiavone saying that we're going to get this interview with Christian Cage. But before he can say anything else, out come the Cleaner Girls. And you hear the beginning of Kenny Omega's theme song. You then see they're dancing. Kenny Omega is behind the sheet on the heel tunnel, accompanied by Don Callis and the Good Brothers. They make their way down in the ring. Fireworks going off without issue, believe it or not. And they settle in the ring. Schiavone leaves. And he's like, oh, I guess I'm not interviewing Christian Cage. I guess everybody gets interrupted here. I don't know. It was pretty funny. So Omega comes in. Don Callis comes in. And Omega has got such a great, great pulse on what a heel looks like. He's always just such, like, he's got a punchable look to him. He really plays it off well. They make their way down the ring, and Don Callis begins talking about Christian Cage and how he's going to have to wait, and you won't be hearing from him tonight, because in case he didn't know, or anyone else around here didn't know, Kenny Omega is the world champion, and him and Don Callis and the Good Brothers run things around here. He continues to talk, bringing up the dud of the failed ring explosion. He says that he basically was a win-win situation for him. If it does explode, he takes care of Jon Moxley. If it doesn't, he makes Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston look like rubes. So I guess this is what they're going with. They are going with the Kenny, Don Callis kind of set up the ring explosion, which we did see Kenny in the workshop not too long ago. I don't know. I guess it's getting heat for Kenny. I'm not huge on it, but It's something. I mean, they don't really have a lot to go on. I think it's kind of a weak explanation, but what do you do? I mean, it's a sucky situation. Eddie Kingston, actually, in the earlier interview, did blame Impact for the dud, which I thought was hilarious. Eddie Kingston then comes out and, showing no fear, he walks in and he looks in the ring and he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, looks at himself in one. He's like, you know what? Screw it. And he walks in, just being a huge babyface. Love Eddie Kingston. Can't say enough good things about him. Don Callis continues to run his mouth, and he gave Eddie Kingston 10 seconds to get out of the ring. There was a doomsday clock at one point. Omega and Callis are mocking Revolution. It's like 10, 9, 8, 7 down, kind of down to 1. And Omega lets out the weirdest line in probably AEW history. He's like, oh, 69 me, Don, 69 me. And Don Callis, like, falls on, I don't know what was going on there. Yeah, not a PG show, I guess. Not weird stuff. Funny, I guess, to some, I don't know. It, like watching BTE, the Good Brothers. I can't stand the Good Brothers on BTE. I guess a little bit of that has fallen off to Kenny, maybe? I don't know. Kenny then asks Eddie, he says, what do you hope to achieve by coming out here? You're not going to hit me. It's a 2-on-1 beatdown, 4-on-1. He said there's 4 people in this ring that could beat you down right now, Eddie Kingston. And Eddie Kingston kind of scoffs. And he says, you know what? I'll give you the first one for free. And he reaches out his cheek, and I'm like, well, Eddie Kingston's going to hit him, right? This is Eddie Kingston. For sure, he's going to hit him. And he does. He hits him. A beatdown comes at the hands of the Good Brothers. Moxley comes out for the save. Then you have Christian Cage coming out. And he comes out. Moxley and the Good Brothers and Don Callis and Kenny are gone, basically. Eddie Kingston is having his way with Carl Anderson, I believe it was. Christian Cage comes out, and Kenny offers his hand, I guess in a sign of truce, to Christian Cage. And Christian just shakes it off like, no, I'm not shaking your hand. Omega starts flipping out. Christian ends up getting him set up for the, what is his finisher called? The Unprettier, maybe? Don Callis pulls him out of the ring. Christian is left alone in the ring, and he notices the AEW championship laying there. He picks it up. Omega's just flipping out outside the ring like an angry chihuahua, and Don Callis is holding him back, keeping him from going into what would be, I guess, Don Callis assumes his inevitable doom. Christian looks at Kenny, looks at the title, drops it, and leaves the ring. So maybe we're setting up Omega versus Christian. That's kind of a crazy feud to do for his debut. We had Brody versus Moxley soon after he debuted, and it worked out great. I know a lot of people were like, oh, LOL, AEW's TNA now. But they forget that TNA was good when Christian Cage was there. That was the height of TNA. We're not talking crappy 2010s TNA with Hogan and Bischoff. That was good stuff on TV and some of the best work in Christian Cage's career. So I'm totally down with giving him a title shot. He shouldn't be taking the title from Omega. But, I mean, if you've been away from wrestling for 7 years and you want to have a really good comeback match, who do you have it with? Kenny Omega. I mean, it'll be fantastic. I would love to see a 3v3 match, Kenny versus and the Good Brothers versus Christian, Moxley, and Kingston. They did announce next week we're getting Moxley and Kingston versus the Good Brothers. Stoked for that. But yeah, I think we'll probably get a trios match between the two groups, hopefully in 2 weeks or so. Really, really excited for that. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about Christian. He's one of my favorites. I've always liked him. Better than Edge, really. I know Edge was always kind of the poster boy of the group, but Christian was kind of the guy for me of the group. And I like TNA, too. So, hey, as long as you don't take all these WWE guys or TNA guys and hotshot them straight to the title, that's fine with me. I'm totally fine with them having a title match. Just maybe don't give him the title on his first match. We then had the women's trios match between Thunder Rosa, Ryo Mizunami, Hikaru Shida, Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, and Maki Ito. The best thing about this match was Maki Ito's entrance because she comes out last and everybody's already brawling inside the ring. Her music comes out, she's doing her sing-along thing, and the music cuts because everybody's fighting, right? So you're like, oh, this is the action now. Not her. She's going to continue singing her song the whole time. It was hilarious seeing her sing her song. Just people bashing each other's heads in. I loved it. I thought it was great. I didn't super love this match. I still think that they're suffering from the fact that they don't have a lot of introduction to these people. Like, Maki Ito is very over online. To the casual viewer, they probably don't know who she is. Ryu Mizunami has zero personality to me. Like, I have nothing. I know nothing about her. I'm not saying she doesn't have charisma in the ring, but I know nothing about her. I have no reason to care about her. That's why I didn't care about the AEW Revolution match. And a lot of the women are just kind of there. Even Thunder Rosa, like, I know she's got this feud with Britt Baker, but what do we really know about her? She doesn't have a whole storyline. Even Shida, it's sad. It's really sad. They're definitely trying to do something with the women's division. This match ended with Rosa pinning Ito with, I think, her finisher. Like, it's like a side pile driver thing. It looks really cool. But after the match, Britt Baker comes in. She's got a crutch, a Rebel's crutch. Her and Rebel and Vicky Guerrero kind of stand tall to end the segment. I was glad to see Thunder Rosa get the win. I think she needed it. She's lost too much lately. But it wasn't a great match by any stretch of the imagination. However, it does set up for the first ever women's main event of Dynamite. Next week, we're getting Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa in a lights out match. And I am really stoked for that, if I'm being honest. I think Britt Baker is the one woman you have on the roster they've really devoted time to in building a character. And Thunder Rosa is one of the best workers, I guess, on the roster. Technically, she's not on the roster, as far as I know. But she's been given a lot of time, and I think this will probably be the end of their feud, hopefully. And one of them will hopefully go on to challenge for the women's title and take it. I want somebody else to have it. Shida is great. She's a great wrestler, but she's had it for over a year now. And it doesn't appear that they're trying to build any storyline around her for some reason or another. We then had a backstage segment with Matt Hardy. He's there with Private Party. And he introduces his newest stablemates, The Butcher, The Blade, and The Bunny. He said he's got enough money to hold down his corporation for the time being, even with Adam Page taking his first quarter's earnings. And yeah, I guess since Kingston's turned babyface, they're just taking his family away, and they're now with Matt Hardy. It makes sense. I mean, you can't turn The Butcher, The Blade, and The Bunny face, I don't think, right now. I believe they're setting up a match with The Blade and The Butcher, The Blade, Private Party, and The Dark Order on AEW Dark Elevation on the first show, which will be main evented by Maki Ito and Riho, which will be very good. I know Matt and Alex said that they saw Jungle Boy versus Danny Limelight, I believe, the first ever AEW Dark Elevation match was recorded before Dynamite this week, said it was very good. Looking forward to seeing that. But yeah, I think it's interesting to put the Butcher and the Blade and the Bunny with Matt Hardy, see how they mesh with Private Party. It could make for some funny segments, though, if I'm being honest. We then had what is technically the main event of the evening, the TNT Championship match between Scorpio Sky and Darby Allin. This was, I thought, a very solid match. You get to see a lot of technical mat wrestling between the two. You don't get to see that a whole lot from Darby Allin. It's usually some stunts and high-flying maneuvers. But he actually does have an amateur wrestling background in high school, apparently. They're mentioning on commentary. And Scorpio Sky also has some MMA background. I don't know that he's ever lost a fight. So interestingly enough, I think he has like 7 wins, maybe. But yeah, it was a really, really good match, in my opinion. Scorpio Sky 100% was a heel throughout this match. I think I was saying a few weeks ago, he seemed like a heel commentator on his commentating spot on Dynamite. And it definitely showed in this match. Darby Allin won with a roll-up. I don't love it. I really think Scorpio deserved something better than that. But, I mean, Darby Allin is kind of known for that. He gets the roll-up wins. He's a smaller guy. I guess it makes sense. I really thought Scorpio Sky had this one. I don't know that it makes sense for the story right now, but I thought he had it for sure. I think he should have won, maybe. I don't know. But after the match, Darby Allin's trying to show Sky a little bit of respect, and Scorpio Sky has a literal heel turn. He applies the heel hook to Darby Allin, and the refs are trying to get him off, and he's just standing there. He's looking at his hands. He's kind of smirking. So yeah, we've got heel Scorpio Sky now. We'll see how that goes. He's got a good cocky kind of mantra to him, so I think it'll work out pretty well. It'll be an interesting character change. Maybe we'll see a little bit more of him on Dynamite. I really like Scorpio Sky. But yeah, Darby Allin is still your TNT champion. We will see who inevitably takes it off of him. Maybe Lance Archer. We then have what is the main event segment of the evening. And as soon as I saw there were like 30 minutes left on the show for the TNT title match, I was like, okay, well, this Inner Circle segment is going to be something big. And oh boy, what a segment it was. I really hate that I don't have anybody else here to discuss this segment with, because in my opinion, this is one of the best segments. I know I said that earlier on the show I was being a little bit hyperbolic, but I think this is one of the best segments in recent history, at least for Dynamite. I loved all of this. You had the Inner Circle in the ring. They're hitting it. Basically, Chris Jericho is saying something about adding a new member to the Inner Circle. MJF cuts him off and says, you know what? I don't think we should be adding anybody to the Inner Circle, Chris. I'm thinking more about cutting somebody out of the Inner Circle. But before things could go any further, Sammy Guevara's music hits. He comes out and he says, Chris. And Jericho is just steaming. He's like, I did not want to see you again. I told you, you were dead to us. He's like, no, Chris, everything we've been through, everything that's happened, you have to just watch something. They point to the screen, and on comes a video of backstage with MJF just right there coming up to the Inner Circle like, hey guys, tonight's the night. Tonight's the night that we usurp Chris Jericho and take control of the Inner Circle. And they're all like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, this doesn't add up at all for what I've seen from the Inner Circle. This is kind of stupid. This is what I thought. And I was like, Jake Hager is not just going to straight up follow MJF. They haven't led to this enough for this to happen tonight. And so they all turn to Chris Jericho, MJF standing there looking smug as ever, and they're all kind of like, you know, they're punching their hand, and I'm like, oh, I see where this is going. And MJF's like, yeah, get him. And Jericho's like, yeah, get him. And they all turn around and face MJF and stand with Chris Jericho. I was so glad to see this, because MJF, being the insufferable, spoiled brat that he is like in a corner, like saying, no, guys, no. But I please, Chris, I, it was just great. I loved it. He's wallowing. Tony Schiavone was all about this segment. And he says, I was never trying to take over control of the Inner Circle, I swear. because I was too busy building my own faction. The lights go out, and they stay out for a good 15 seconds. And we're just going to stew here for a second. The lights come back on, and guess what? You have Sean Spears, FTR, Tully Blanchard, and Wardlow. That's right, folks. It appears as if MJF is the fourth horseman. Now, it's a little bit odd. You have Wardlow. That's the fifth horseman, technically. But you know what? MJF completely changes his demeanor. He just watches as his new stable just beats the snot out of Jericho, Guevara, Santana. Ortiz was taken out with Ortiz and Jake Hager. Jake Hager was taken out with like one hit. MJF busts Jericho open with a shot to the face with his diamond ring. He then picks up the baseball bat, hits him with the new section, the midsection. MJF then demands that they drag Jericho off the stage. They have Wardlow powerbomb Chris Jericho off the stage, and it now appears as if there's a new leader in town with a new top heel faction. I think this is probably a babyface turn for the Inner Circle as well. I think it's got to be. I'm excited for that. Not only that, I'm excited they're actually going to keep the Inner Circle together. I think they work. I think they have a lot more opportunities now as a babyface faction. And what a double swerved in Dynamite. This is not anything anybody saw coming, I don't think, because I thought for sure MJF wasn't going to be involved with the Four Horsemen storyline. I didn't think we were getting it yet, but it's here. I'm excited. MJF, FTR, Sean Spears, Wardlow. I mean, can you make a better faction? I can't think of one. I thought for sure that Jericho had outsmarted MJF, and we're about to see MJF get beat down. Tony Schiavone is probably just incredibly sad he didn't get to see that. But to see him, and at the moment I'm thinking, okay, he's sniveling in the corner. I love this, but is this great for MJF's character? He's one of the top heels in the company. And then it just all turned, and I'm like, oh, you guys know what you're doing. Well, who might I doubt you? This is one of the best endings of Dynamite in history. I loved it. I don't know if they're going to be called the Four Horsemen. Technically, there's five of them, the six if you're counting Tully. So I don't know how that's going to work. Maybe they're going to be called the Revelation. Maybe they're going to be called Outer Square. I don't know. We'll see. I'm super stoked for this. This is honestly like just this little reveal kind of turns Dynamite for me a little bit because, you know, you got the same factions week after week. You got the same things happening week after week. This is totally new. I'm so excited for it. I can't say enough good things about it. Just a great way to end the show. I'm just got me super psyched for next week. But yeah, that is my review of Dynamite. I'm sorry that I'm here by myself. Obviously, like I said, Matt and Kyle don't love y'all. So it's just me. But yeah, I'm glad you did stick with me through the show tonight. I really enjoyed it. If I had to give the show a grade this week, I think I would give it an A-, which is kind of my go-to grade, right? There's some good, some bad. Let's be fair. Actually, probably a B+. Because there wasn't a whole lot of great wrestling, but there was a lot of great segments on tonight's show. It's a segment-heavy show, pay-per-view show. So they kind of tend to be a little bit promo-heavy. But yeah, maybe a B+. I'm gonna stick with the B+. I didn't care for the trios match that much. Kyle, I know, felt the same way. But yeah, I thought it was a really good show. I love this segment, and I'm really looking forward to what this brings to Dynamite. Thank you for being on the show with us tonight. You can follow us all on Facebook at Wrestle Life Radio, Twitter, and Instagram, I believe, at Wrestle Life Pod. If it's not right, sue me. I mean, I don't do the social media stuff. You all know that. But I'm here on your podcast feed every week on Wrestle Life Radio. I'm Micah. I've been your host for the evening. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have an absolutely wonderful day. Storyline there, Matt.